The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on July 30, 2017. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Good to see you all today. I'm glad to see Dottie is here. Hi, Dottie. Dottie asked me a while ago, the last time I spoke here on a Sunday, you asked me if I would talk on kindness. Do you remember? Well, that's what you're going to get today anyway. So, kindness, yeah. So, you remember? Mm-hmm. Interesting topic, and certainly very central to our teaching and our practice. And I think we can start with the Buddha in the Dhammapada, verse 183, which you've often heard me recite, where the Buddha said, to do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome, purify your own mind. To do what is wholesome, to avoid the unwholesome, purify your own mind. And I was thinking today, too, that when Dottie asked about kindness, it seems very appropriate, I think, for us to remind ourselves of this, given the kind of political scene that we seem to find today. Kindness doesn't seem to be all that present in a lot of the rhetoric that we hear. Of course, this is really always the case, I think, with us, that there's differences and fighting and arguing and putting others down and promoting certain views and all of this. It's the fractured world of our minds and our thinkings, our longing hearts, wanting things to go a certain way. We get frustrated and angry when they don't. And under these circumstances, it's very difficult to practice kindness or to think about kindness. Just exactly what is kindness? But here the Buddha gives it to us succinctly, because this underlies virtually everything that we have in our teaching and in our understanding. To do what is wholesome, to avoid the unwholesome, to purify your own mind. This isn't about purifying the mind of others. That's really not your business. There's nothing you can do about that anyway, but we'll occupy ourselves with that. Jesus also spoke of this. I think it's in Matthew, where he talks about, that we'll obsess on the mote in our neighbor's eye, and yet we don't notice the plank in our own eye. So, we carry on in this way. And in the various cultures that might express this or speak to this, we can find references to this among wiser people among us who just point this out from time to time. But as the Buddha expressed it here, to do what is wholesome. Avoid what is unwholesome. And purify your own mind. Oh, and then he said, and this is extremely important too, I should have included it, but that verse ends with, the last phrase is, this is the teaching of the awakened. Do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome, purify your own mind. This is what the awakened teach. Always, this is what they're pointing out to us. And the wholesome means of the whole, of totality. A Buddha, an awakened one, one who's really in touch with what is actually going on here, who sees this and lives out of this. Their mind is on wholeness, on totality. They're seeing things in this context, avoiding Well, the unwholesome, the fractured, the divided. There's the world of ego, of me and what I want, or my team and what we're trying to get here. Just to avoid that. This isn't about killing that or stifling that or fighting against it or any of it, because that's more of the fractured world carrying on in this way. So it's a matter of just really seeing this. This is what the awakened teach. And also this matter of, you know, purify your mind, your own mind. Stop trying to straighten up others or think that the problem is over there or whatever. What's going on in your mind? Your own leaning of heart and the grasping that follows from that and all the conniving and finagling and fighting and groveling and all of that that goes on as a result of, you know, seeing things only from my point of view and what I want. But the awakened teach is, you know, see the wholesome here. Put your mind on that. And it is out of this that we can find kindness is within this. This term kindness, kind, to be kind, it's an interesting term. You know, we talk about humankind. We talk about those of our own kind, to be with our own people, this sort of thing, our own family, our own kin. The word kin is related to this word kindness, with the idea that we will treat our kin, those that are like us, that are close to us, that we're related to, we'll treat them in this particular way that we call kindness. They are of our kind. But as I said, we can expand this out. We can also, and we do, speak of humankind as maybe to distinguish all of us from other animals and creatures and plants, insects and whatever. But at the same time too, we can extend whatever that behavior that we would have, well, toward me, toward myself, toward my people, my relatives, my friends, we can continue to expand that outward. Because as the Buddha pointed out, what the awakened teach, you know, is do what is wholesome. Do what is of the whole. To act in a way that is mindful of wholeness, of everyone. And this kindness, you know, how we would treat ourselves and our loved ones, this, we can expand this into the whole, into how we interact with those that maybe aren't so close to us. Start to recognize, well, if we're talking about human beings, humankind, well, they have similar minds. They have desires in their hearts. They have certain loves and hates, just like us. Why not? I mean, they're of our kind. They're human beings. So we can maybe treat them that way. They probably want to live in peace and harmony. Maybe you do, too. But then make that what you give your attention to. And not trying to pick out some little part of this and noticing that maybe somebody over here is doing something a little different. You don't like it. This isn't kindness. Now, this isn't harmony. This isn't peacefulness. This is a disturbed heart and mind. And what the awakened teach is to look out for this. To realize when you're falling into what we would call it's unwholesome. It's not of the whole. And you can turn your attention back to the whole, and where you can extend this, what can I say, I don't know, this sensitivity to others, outward and beyond just humankind. The other plants and animals and, you know, beings that too want to live in peace and harmony. They probably too have a similar desire in their own hearts. And of course, we can extend it even beyond that. We say that, you know, to the bodhisattva too, one who's on this way, this path to enlightenment. It really doesn't quite work that way, but sometimes it's expressed as that. But to the bodhisattva, to one who aspires to this life of awakening, to the bodhisattva, everything is alive. Everything has life. And there are many ways we can look at this, and at times I'll look at it in various ways, but it's just simply to realize that this life that belongs to really to all beings, animate and inanimate, is actually your life. Or put it this way, that your life is really the life of the whole. And to the bodhisattva, to one who aspires to live out of awakeness, they don't lose sight of this. This is what the Buddhas, the awakened, are always mindful of. And in this way, we can extend our own life, our own actions and words into the whole with this kind of attentiveness, this mindfulness, this attention. Recognizing and realizing that this actually is what our life is. This is kindness with a complete understanding. It is not treating one thing differently than another. That's another kind of an unwritten rule that we have. Well, it's not really a rule, but it's unwritten. But the idea that we have here in Buddhism and in Zen as well, is treat all people alike, treat all beings alike, treat everyone alike. And how is it that we, well, again, this kind of speaks of wholeness again. It's mindful of wholeness. Treat all beings alike. And not according to, you know, our particular values, where some people are blocked off or divided out. Maybe they're not as valuable or as wonderful or great as we are. To just simply not see it this way. Or, well, at least to begin to be mindful of noticing when you are holding such views. And at some point you might be able to realize that even to just have such a view is already painful, misery. There's fear in it, there's anger in it, there's turmoil. It is certainly not a heart and mind that is seeing things in terms of wholeness. It is of the unwholesome. And so the action that comes from this sort of thing, of course, we wouldn't call this kind. This is where the lack of kindness shows up, is in this kind of fractured view of things. And seeing myself as somehow fundamentally different than the other, when in fact, actually not. Not just to other people, who are maybe quite distinct and different from you, seemingly from a different culture, whatever. But also to plants and animals, and to rocks and trees, to the world itself. This is your life. And the kindness, the way in which we would want to be treated ourselves, can be extended to all of this. Yeah, of course, there might be those moments when something out there, someone, it's probably another human being, who for whatever reason, they hate you. They don't like you. They're disturbed by you. Yeah, we'll run into things like this. Well, just understand what that is. Understand the pain that is in that kind of a mind. Do you want to replicate that yourself? Do you want to reflect it back? Or can you turn your attention back to what the Buddha points out, what Jesus pointed out? To give some attention to your own mind and turn your mind back toward wholeness. And then you can recognize the suffering in the mind and heart of that other. And so maybe you don't have to quite react in the same way. Because to react against whatever they're projecting there, of course, is to be pulling yourself back into your own tight confines of your own ego self here. That feels threatened or feels hurt or whatever. Again, this is a matter of to practice kindness is to turn our attention back toward the whole. Again, this is where the awakened, you know, always are. This is where they're coming from. When we say then how to react or how to live or what you must do, there really isn't any real rule for this. Except if your mind is in term is open to the whole, you will know how to act in any given moment. Of course, again, if you feel threatened or attacked or whatever, immediately you're confined in this tight little space. It's very easily that forms. But the moment you have a chance to catch yourself, just see if you can, you know, step back out of that again. This is what we must do. But there's no particular rule as to how you should act. Well, of course, maybe we say, well, you should act, you know, kindly toward others. And sure, why not? But it's very difficult for human beings, philosophers and spiritual teachers of various kinds, to come up with a way to formulate, well, how is it that we should act? And we do have this wonderful law, this wonderful rule, the golden rule, that we've invented that might give us some indication as to how maybe we should act. Because it's pretty hard to say specifically, well, what should you do? So we have this golden rule that says, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it seems like a pretty good rule. In fact, it's so good we call it golden, which I guess means it's pretty good. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And we find this, I think we also find this, is it in Matthew? But we find this in the teachings of Jesus, and we also find it in other traditions as well. And we even find it in the teachings of the Buddha, of the awakened. But it's formulated in a different way than is normally presented. Because you see the problem, this is what philosophers and theologians have noted over the centuries, that there's something a little off about the golden rule. They don't quite know what or what to do about it exactly. Or is there a better rule we can use? Because you see the problem with the golden rule, very simply put, there's all kinds of arguments and scenarios and pictures of how things can go, but a very just a very simple way to set it out there is, if you're going to follow this as a rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, if it just so happens that I happen to be kind of a cantankerous man who, you know, just enjoys nothing more than to get into, say, a fist fight with somebody else, I go to the bar and pick a fight and whatever, that's what I love to do. And so if I were to follow this rule, I would do unto someone else as I'd have them do unto me. Yeah, let's get into a brawl here. And this is the problem with it. That's a very stark and straightforward one example. But there's all kinds of, you know, philosophers, they debate these things. There's all kinds of subtle examples that this can be broken down into. But it always leaves us with this kind of a problem. So what's the rule do you use to qualify this in some way? And of course, there's nothing you can put on that to fix it up and to make it better. They've tried. I've studied this stuff. And, you know, they have the inversion of the golden rule. And they have, you know, the contradiction of the golden rule, which of course doesn't work at all. It's not the golden rule. But that would be if you say you do not do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or you do unto others as you would not have them do unto you, or something like this. But of course, that isn't really the golden rule. Well, what we find in the Buddha Dharma, in the teaching of the awakened, who are looking at things in terms of wholeness, totality, they express what is called the negation of the golden rule, which isn't actually just to flip one side of it. That's the negative of the golden. It's not the golden rule, it's the negative. You flip the whole thing over, and it's called the negative expression of the golden rule, but it's still the golden rule. Philosophers in the West have noted this for a long time, but they say if you just express it in a negative form, it's still the same as the positive form, so you might as well just be positive, and so we're still left with do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But the negative expression of the golden rule, it's still the golden rule, the negative expression of the golden rule, it's not the contradiction of it, flipping one side or the other. Flipping the whole thing is to do not do unto others what you would not have them do unto you. And what this does is eliminate the problem, which I've talked about, I guess it was maybe the last talk I gave here, when afterward Dottie asked me if I would talk on kindness. This takes care of this problem that we have of willed action. Right? I guess I titled that talk Intentional Action, which is a talk I gave before this one on a Sunday. But this matter, and I pointed out how this is just central to the Buddha's teaching here, this matter of intentional action or willed action, and all it embroils us in all kinds of difficulty and pain and suffering and confusion to the point where it seems like we can't even get out of this. We get into tight moral dilemmas here that seem to be completely unworkable and unfixable, as is the case we find here with the golden rule. But if you completely negate the whole thing, and yes, philosophers say, but it's still the golden rule. Yeah, but you look at it a little more closely. You've eliminated the problem here of willed action, which gets right to the very heart of, as I pointed out last time, this is the great insight of the Buddha. And it's one that took me quite some time finally to appreciate. I studied this, I was reading about it, I could see it was always this big deal about willed action. And it took me some time before finally I saw what it's pointing out here. This is a subtle thing, but when in turning the whole thing over, it is do not do. It's not prescriptive. It's not telling you what to do. That's the problem with the golden rule. It's telling you, do this. Even though, of course, pointing out, it's a good thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Yeah, that's pretty good. In most circumstances, that would work rather well. But it does have these problems. But if you flip the whole thing, do not do unto others what you would not have them do unto you. The main difference there is that we have eliminated this matter of willed action. Remember, I pointed out that was how the Buddha defined karma. Karma, which is, you know, willed action in Buddhism. It just means action, but the Buddha used it in that way. But by eliminating that, we are acting in a way that resembles the action out of the whole. out of totality. To do what is wholesome, to avoid what is unwholesome. Unwholesome, yeah, if you're doing something prescriptive, something intentional, something ruled out, do this, follow this. The Buddha's insight was this binds us to dukkha, to suffering. This is a very subtle thing. You might have to look at it for a while, maybe even a few years. You can just come back to it and look at it. But if you really sink down into this, you can see, I think maybe you can feel the difference here in this. And it's the only difference there is, which is a talk I gave before that last talk I gave. This changes everything. And while, yes, it's still the golden rule, but it's not directing you to take any particular action. But just avoid those things that you wouldn't... You're going to do something now to somebody or for somebody, but it's something that you wouldn't want them to be doing to you. Avoid that. It's not telling you what to do, but don't do that. And this, that simple change right there will give us, finally, at long last, a viable, workable, livable, moral compass here as to how to live, how to conduct yourself. This is kindness. Kindness comes out of that. What is that? In the other way, yes, it could be kind. This person is hungry, you feed them. It's kind. We can say that's kind. You know, and then of course we can say a rule, you know, that, you know, when you see a hungry person, you should take steps to feed them. Yeah, okay. Just be very careful here. Because sometimes this kind of kindness isn't always kind. And we can be confused about, well, what is good and right, and what do these people need? And you're going to try to supply them with something which really isn't. And you're not even taking into account how they might view it. Oh, there's just endless problems there that could arise. So I'm not saying, well, don't feed the hungry person. No, feed the hungry person. You know, you can follow things that appear on the surface to be very kind. Yeah, but just be very careful with that. But watch the actions that you're taking that don't engage in actions that you wouldn't want the reverse to be occurring. You don't want that. You wouldn't want them to be putting this on you or giving this to you or taking this from you or whatever it might be. Avoid that. And that is kindness. And what else is there about this? Well, to act in this way, the whole world begins to settle down. It begins to quiet down. When you're acting in a deliberate way, you're stirring it up, stirring it up. That's that muddy water. I've talked about that so many times. I won't bring it up now. That's the muddy water. And that's our usual way, one way or another. And we think we're doing good. And maybe you are in a limited way, but realize how limited it is and be careful. But if you just stop that, it doesn't mean you can't take action once in a while when you see something that might be very helpful for someone. Please go ahead. But don't act out of the idea that I'm going to be doing some good here. But just to avoid those things that you wouldn't want it being put on you. And the whole world, this is in your mind, but this is to purify your own mind. The whole world begins to settle down, and you can see it clearly. And this is acting out of kindness. This is acting out of awakening. As the Buddha pointed out, to do what is wholesome, this is to be acting out of wholesomeness, out of totality. It is not karma producing. You know, it is not involved with willed action, intention. You know, so this is kindness. And why is this the case that the world settles down? Well, it happens to be the case because the world actually is settled down. The world in totality is peaceful. In wholeness and totality, it is peaceful. Sometimes we might act, well, how can I bring about peace? Well, you can't bring about peace. Peace is already, it's right here. Stop, and you'll find it. We're going to get out there, we're going to do things, you know, we're going to march for peace and carry our flags and banners for peace. Well, we don't understand what peace is. Because we demand, well, I want to bring this to an end, the warring. And yeah, of course. But how are you going to bring that about? You can't bring it about. You have to recognize that it is already here. It is only because we're stirring up the water. We are making it muddy. That we have the muddy water. And, of course, even if you stop, if you can't stop, and it's pretty hard to just stop, and we're still going to be stirring it a little bit, at least, probably. But we have the idea that the water somehow must be made clear. Well, the water isn't going to be made clear. That is the nature of the fragmented world. And as long as there is mind, consciousness, there will be the world of fragmentation. But you don't need to live out of arranging that and trying to structure it in a way that pleases me more and all of that. This is what we can learn to stop. And there's kindness in that action. And compassion. Compassion is to act in such a way as to, well, to reestablish this peace. And maybe to help people to recognize it, to see this, to realize what this is and what they must do. Which is just simply to, you know, simplify your life. Now, all the wonderful and good things that you're trying to bring about, don't have too many ideas about that. Just avoid those things that are going to fracture it more. Set one thing off against another. Just avoid this. You don't need to carry on in this way. None of us do. That is kindness. That is compassion. To the extent that we still want to offer kindness and compassion in the fractured sphere. You know, I'm not saying, you know, don't carry on with such practices. A kind gesture, a kind word. You know, a heart that goes out to others. A heart of compassion. Yeah, these are all wonderful things. Just be mindful of how easily these things get embroiled with intentional action. And if you can recall, maybe we don't understand this at first, but this is what the Buddha, this goes to the very heart and core of his deep insight. That is bound and, you know, is the flip side of it really is his realization that we don't find self in this experience. That's another way of looking at it. But that's how central this is. It gets right to the very heart of the Buddha's insight. So I would invite you just to, if you can, from time to time, just, you know, contemplate that. Look at that. But most of all, to notice when you're acting in speaking in a way, you know, that isn't coming out of this wholeness. And I'm not giving that to you like I'm preaching to you like because I do this perfectly, because I don't do this perfectly. I don't know anybody who does. I'm not sure it's even humanly possible. But we can make an effort. And we can move in that direction to avoid what is unwholesome. And in avoiding what is unwholesome, you have a better chance to just live out of the wholesome, out of the whole. And that's kindness. Okay, well, maybe that's all I have to say. This peacefulness, I guess I did want to say this, maybe I did already, but this peacefulness, that is totality, the world as a whole. That's what when the Buddha was speaking of that, you know, to do what is wholesome, is do what is peaceful. Do what is of the whole and of totality. It's not of the fragmented part, one fighting against the other, or in conflict in some way with the other. Of course, these things can also work in harmony. That's good. That always cheers our hearts, I think. But don't hang on to any of those things too tightly. And as best you can, try not to lose sight of the whole. Because this is what a Buddha is one who hasn't lost sight of the whole. It's not referring to any particular person who's cruising in this area, but to the extent that we haven't lost sight of the whole here in this circumstance, this is Buddha. And it is really your true nature. It's this nature of reality as a whole itself, which is peaceful. Okay. Well, maybe I said enough, but do you have any questions about what I said here? Yeah, David.
It's not a question, but I think the root of the word also has something to do with children, as in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How we treat children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good observation. Thanks. Yeah, kinder. Child. They are of our kind. Anything else? Anything else you want, Dottie, on that? Yes, Mary.
Can you say something about the fact that possibly people right now, but certainly true of all times and places, I think, there seems to be so much war and so much discord and so much disharmony, and that's disheartening. It's
oh, yeah.
Saddening.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. Yeah, did you have more? Oh.
No, I did have some understanding of what you said about how wholeness is totality, that its nature is peacefulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's easy to lose sight of
that. Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, after 9/11 and, you know, when the buildings came down and all of that, and how disturbing it was for all of us, you know. Remember, we were all pretty stunned, wouldn't you say? And in the next few days after that, we had these the anthrax scare, remember? Anthrax was being mailed out here and there to our senators and things like this. And then it was kind of like, what's going on here? You know, it's really kind of crazy, yeah. And then I also remember watching the evening news, and I think was this time that, well, they started putting up these different colors, you know, like at airports and that and stuff. That came a little later, I think. But But I remember watching the evening news. It seems like it was something about this anthrax stuff that was coming out at that time then, right on the heels of 9/11. And kind of wondering, are these related? Is this a furtherance of this sort of thing, or what? And I remember, as the news, I'm watching this, and I remember just attending to my innards here, myself. I could feel the tension and the fear, you know, like in the gut, you know, and just kind of coming up and tensing in my body as I'm watching this. And I realized the fear coming up in me, bodily, and of course into my mind as well. But in looking at that, and I realized what was happening. I realized what was happening to me. You know, because I do give attention to this. I come back and scan myself from time to time. Where am I? Watch your own mind, and it includes your body. And this is our practice. And at this point, when this was coming up like this, and I saw that, immediately I just realized what was happening with me. And I just told myself, you are not going to be afraid. I'm not going to give way to that. And it almost seemed like maybe I was being, and of course all of us, being manipulated, perhaps. I don't know that for sure, but it certainly seems like that could have been behind a lot of this. We were deliberately manipulated to become fearful, afraid. And of course, when the populace becomes afraid, then it's also kind of easy to exert controls and stuff. And this is all, talk about intentional action, on a big scale perhaps. But of course, I don't know this for sure, but what I do know, and what I did know, is what was happening in me. And whether it was coming deliberately from some people, you know, putting this on me and all of us to make us fearful or whatever, but when I recognized the changes that were occurring right now, these unwholesome changes occurring in my own body and mind, you know, you catch that and bring yourself back to sanity, to calm down. Because I've learned in life now that I want to get back to a stable mind. Just like years ago, the first real test I had of this years ago when I discovered I had cancer. And the prognosis was that I wasn't going to live more than a couple of months. That was over 40, well, what was it, about 40 years ago now. So prognosis was wrong, but... But it was I was a young man at the time. I was 32. And going to live only a few more months. And I could feel the fear just coming in, you know, from all sides. But I had already learned this at that point. Fortunate, through this practice, to recognize my mind, to watch my mind, to see what was going on there. And to not give way to this. Because what I wanted was a steady mind, a calm mind, a sober mind. And so when you see something like this coming in from the outside like that, it seems, it's not really coming from the outside, but it's because it's coming up in your own mind. But when you see that happening, it is possible to take hold of that and to turn that around, to recognize what that is. And that the world outside of that, the large world, the world as a whole in totality is peaceful. And you can bring your mind back to that. You can make your mind resemble the mind of a whole. In the Buddhism Plain and Simple, I talk about this, you know, I talk about leaning of mind. When your mind is leaning toward one thing or away from another, you're repelled by that, you love this, whatever. So the mind is being tossed about in this way. And this is the pain, the suffering, the confusion, the fear, the longing, the all of that is what that is. The mind of the whole totality is peaceful. It's calm, it's stable. How can it lean? There's nothing to lean to. It's totality. But it is a mind like that. And it is possible to, in recognizing what is going on within your own personal little ego mind here, as it's being tossed about, to realize what is taking place there with that. And in watching that, the mind of itself will just straighten up. It'll just straighten out. Right there. And I learned this in a pretty big way, a powerful way, you know, some years ago, when I was up against this life-threatening situation. It is powerful. And it can keep you sane under the most terrible circumstances. I'm convinced of this. But it is sanity, and it is a mind that resembles the mind of the whole. This is, and the Buddha spoke of, do what is wholesome. Come out of this. And this is what the awakened, this is where they are. They see the whole. They don't lose sight of it. And there's that ballast, that stability that prevents us from just being tossed about all over on the surface. You know, the waves tossing about. We have some ballast here that's sunk deeply into the depths, where things are settled and quiet. And even though the surface might from time to time become very choppy and turbulent in various ways, we don't have to be caught by that. And it is something that we can find. And I found it again at that time when the 9/11 and the anthrax and all that, and I recognized my old friend here, fear coming up again like this. But I knew what I could do about it. I knew how to settle it down again. But this is what we need. And that is to move toward a mind of awakening, enlightenment itself. It is always there with us. It's there any time. Recognize when you're being spun out in some way. Bring yourself back to this. It's always there, always available to you. It's your treasure store, as Dogen speaks of. So, and it'll open. It'll open all of itself, but as long as you don't keep running away. So I don't know if I... Did I answer you?
Thank you very much.
Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.